hope of your expanding your successful new way of life to other cities across the country?
The next stage is to actually identify areas in the country and develop a network of the model in which a new way of life has developed that successfully brings people back into the community. There's been a lot of interest, and I'm going to respond to that interest because all over America, we have found that women have been taken out of their homes, men have been sent away, and they need to be able to come back in successfully.
Susan Burton and Michelle Alexander, we thank you so much for being with us. Susan's new book is called Becoming Ms. Burton. That does it for the show. I'll be in New Mexico tonight in Santa Fe, tomorrow in Tempe, Arizona, and in Houston. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is May the 19th, 2017. The new WHFR Journal, we cover local news and give you some opinions and commentaries on what's going on in Dearborn and the surrounding area, including our beautiful state of Michigan, of course. My name is Jay Koronick. I'm station advisor here at WHFR.FM. And as I tell my students, do as I say, not as I do necessarily, in case I mess up on the show that I'm doing now. So we're looking at the newspapers, as we usually do, the two weekly papers, Dearborn Times Herald for this area and Dearborn Press and Guide. We also take a look, of course, every week, just so you know. I always check out the Downriver The News Herald, thenewsherald.com, at their website. And, of course, Arab American News, which is a free publication in Dearborn, Metro Times, and other sources, too, michiganradio.org, mlive.com. There's all kinds of ways to get information gathered by professionals, which is important because they know the difference between facts and opinion. Now, we do give you opinions, but we let you know their opinions, all right? And opinions don't mean that you're supposed to believe as we say, as we read the opinions. You don't have to agree with them at all. They are there to stimulate your thinking about issues and topics. Never act on any single bit of information you get anywhere these days, whether it's social media or cable news channels or your friends. One person seemingly stating a fact is not necessarily doing that, and that can get you into a lot of trouble. So be careful out there, as I always say, but especially with the news that you gather. So we're looking, I think, first at the Times Herald. They both came out. I'm looking at the Wednesday, May 17th editions here. Dingell and Hamoud listened to community concerns during town hall. This was a town hall that happened back on May 8th. Residents and community leaders showed up to discuss issues important to them with U.S. Representative Debbie Dingell, Democrat Dearborn, and State Representative Abdullah Hamoud, Democrat 15th District, Michigan, during this town hall. During the meeting, which was held at University of Michigan Dearborn Fairlane Center, South Michigan Room, Dingell and Hamoud gave attendees an update on what is taking place at the state and federal government levels before answering questions. Quote from Hamoud, Debbie asked me to collaborate with her on this town hall to allow residents to talk about any issue at the state and federal level. So it was wide open. The issues included teacher pensions, attempted income tax elimination, state budget, and infrastructure. Dingell listed health care, transportation, infrastructure, Middle East military action, deportation, and mental illness as her concerns at the federal level. All levels need to work together now more than ever, she said. People want to be engaged and ask questions, which is why hosting town halls more frequently is important. During the question and answer portion of the meeting, the biggest concerns from residents were, continued on page A, the only show where you can hear the pages turning on the air. That's right. Immigration, school funding, mental illness, retirement health care, sanctioned cities, insurance rates, and medical marijuana. Hamoud said he is working on a 17-bill package to make Michigan a welcoming state. When asked about pensions for teachers and public safety employees, Dingell said, quote, we need to appreciate public service employees for all their hard work and not cut the pensions of police, fire, teachers, and others. Should be unquote, too. Dearborn Heights Councilman Dave Wasim Abdallah asked Hamoud and Dingell about their feelings on medical marijuana because he was between supporting and not supporting it. He said, I am also struggling with my opinion on it, but remind myself that I need to be open-minded, Dingell said. I know what drugs can do to a family, so it's difficult, unquote. Hamoud said his decision was made based off research he's done on the use of medical marijuana. And he said, this is Abdallah, the representative, okay, not Abdallah, who's a Dearborn Heights city councilman currently. My opinion is driven by the data that I've looked at. States with medical marijuana have seen a drop in usage rates, added state revenue, and can now control it, unquote. On the topic of insurance rates in Michigan, which are some of the highest in the country, the issue of collapsing infrastructure becomes involved. A quote from Hamoud, no funding to infrastructure leads to the filing of claims and higher insurance rates. People don't want to be driving uninsured, which some are doing. A good public transportation system would help issues in our area, and it's a shame the Regional Transit Authority proposal didn't pass during the last election, unquote. Also during the town hall was a discussion of mental health and breaking its stigma in the Dearborn community. Hassan Abdallah, support for addicts and families through Empowerment Substance Abuse Coalition. He was the executive director of that. That's a long name. Maybe there's an acronym. Support for Addicts and Families through Empowerment Substance Abuse Coalition. I don't even want to write all those letters down. In any event, I think you know what his organization is about. He was in attendance to provide information on addiction and services available. And he said, quote, we helped train the Dearborn Police Department on how to administer the drug Naloxone, there we go, which works to reverse an opioid overdose. The officers have already saved 7 lives doing the Naloxone. The chief and department even took the training a step further by making a requirement before becoming a police officer in Dearborn, unquote. For more information on SAFE, visit its Facebook page, and for questions, email safecoalitioninfo@gmail.com. So they didn't have a town hall meeting like some of the other town hall meetings we've seen with Republicans around the country. This has been on national news, of course, where the people are just really very upset. Dare I say angry? Mad? Only dogs are mad. People get angry because of what's happening in Congress. In this case, it seemed like there was a good discussion on what needed to be done. The question is, what can be done when both Representative Abdallah Hamoud and Debbie Dingell are Democrats and they're not in the majority nowhere close to the majority of the people either in our Michigan House of Representatives or in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. Therefore, they can be the loyal opposition. They can speak out as much as they are allowed to in those sessions. But unless they rally support in the local areas, unless they get you, loyal listener, and me, to try to somehow influence the representatives who are Republicans, if we don't like Republican policies. If you don't like Democratic policies, you don't have to worry too much because they don't have power. So all of the bills, all the 17-bill package that Hamoud is working on, it's wonderful, and maybe there's something that everybody can agree on, like the color of the sky, or, you know, and that will get passed. Some of these things I'm pointing out are my opinions, and remember, here comes the disclaimer we always have to do once per show. All the opinions expressed on the new WHFR Journal are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, administrators, or students. But it's good to have town halls. Everybody agrees. That's a wonderful thing. I never heard about that, however, way back on May 8th. it's only a week or so ago. So who got the word? Am I not on the right mailing list? I thought I was on Hamoud's mailing list and Debbie Dingell's from their offices. I don't remember getting email, any notification. Was it just a sign-up posted at U of MD? It's always a question, you know. I mean, how can they get the word out? Maybe I should subscribe to their Facebook pages. Ooh, that's what I should do. See, I don't use social media hardly at all, not actively anyway. I know what they are, but I don't use them. So maybe that's how the word is getting out. But, you know, if you're going to get the word out on something like a town hall meeting with your elected representative, the whole community needs to find out. And the only way you can do that these days is, of course, social media, I guess. Because not everybody is on a group list for their email. It's too expensive to mail letters or postcards to everybody. So it's a real problem in setting up town hall meetings and getting good attendance. Turning the page. Dearborn is closer to provide dispatch services for Melvindale. The city council of Dearborn on May 9th, that is, week ago or so, authorized the mayor to execute a contract with the city of Melvindale to provide dispatch services. Councilman Thomas Tofelsky was the only council member to vote against the resolution, which passed 6-1. We know that Tofelsky is against a lot of things that will cost the city more money, even if there's a payback in the long term. I don't know what his reasons were. It's not stated here. It is later. Okay, well, I'll read that for you for sure. I always read through these articles all the way to get the information. But let's go ahead. The resolution passed Dearborn City Council 6-1. It will provide Melvindale, this contract will, with free dispatch services for the first 5 years at a cost of $150,000 per year to Dearborn. So 5 times $150,000 is $750,000. I believe. Am I multiplying that right? I think I am. So $750,000. After the 5 years, though, Melvindale will be responsible for paying annually for the services. Melvindale will also join the statewide required 800 megahertz system. You know, WHFR, we broadcast on the FM band, and that's from 88 to 108 megahertz. So 800 megahertz is way up there, much higher than the FM band. But it is becoming the standard throughout the state of Michigan, thanks to the state of Michigan setting that as the standard. And I think that's very helpful that all the many little police departments and fire departments can share information that way if there's a major crisis that spills over city boundaries. Because crises of one sort or another don't respect city boundaries. Not much, or not all the time anyway. Because they don't have any respect. That's why, you know, they're not conscious of it first of all. Discussions between Dearborn and Melvindale began in 2014, and shortly after, Dearborn applied for a $3.2 million state grant. Dearborn being awarded the grant depended on one other community joining the Dispatch Center pledge. And we got it. Melvindale is it. Okay, so we're getting $3.2 million. Maybe that helps to pay for the $750,000. And other things, too. The Melvindale City Council, I think we reported this on this show, on April 19th, authorized its mayor to execute the contract with the city of Dearborn. Dearborn Heights is still in talks to join the center, along with Garden City, Inkster, Wayne, and Westland. In the future, Tufelski said that there will be an opportunity to expand past the two current cities that are planned to be involved. And Tufelski did say, and he voted against us, he says, I believe we need a new dispatch center. It's a win-win for both communities, but we were the lead agency and we should have negotiated a better deal for residents of Dearborn, unquote. He also said that he is concerned if other cities want to join the dispatch center, that they would also want free services. And what's the reason for free services? To allow Melvindale to plan how to get the money in 5 years to start paying for that, or to save up money, or apply for some other grants for themselves to pay for it? I don't know. And I don't believe that was stated here. It's a 500-square-foot Dearborn Dispatch Center. It's on the second floor of the police station. A new 5,400-square-foot area is inside the Dearborn Administrative Center, and it'll be the new home for the new Consolidated Dispatch Center. I thought Mayor O'Reilly said that was already being partially occupied when we talked to him here on this show for an hour back in March. But maybe you just meant that they already have 500 square feet, which is enough right now, I guess. It seems like the new Dearborn Administrative Center second floor is not ready yet, or is currently, it's getting ready probably. Dearborn will switch from its current 400 megahertz system to the 800 megahertz system in order to be on the same system as other cities for communication. A radio system, voice recorder, 911 telephone system, and radio logger will also be purchased under the agreement. And Dearborn Councilman David Bazzi said that we have a problem on the road with our police officers with their radios used to communicate. The fact that we can outfit all of our officers in Melvindale's as well to get them on the same system is a positive step, unquote. Bazzi also said that the consolidated dispatch centers are the future, and Councilman Michael Cerini agreed, saying it will be a major upgrade. And let's see a quote here from Cerini. I drove to the dispatch center in Madison Heights with a councilman from another city, and it's a huge upgrade. I watched how calls come in, and I thought it was a tremendous advanced way, that's the way he put it, of doing it, and I know it was a major center, unquote. There is a planned total of 38 full-time dispatchers answering 911 and non-emergency phone calls. It doesn't say how many are already being employed by the city of Dearborn. So there's going to be a few jobs created by that, certainly, although it's consolidation, so maybe fewer jobs than if all the areas like Melvindale are doing it themselves. Obviously, Melvindale, once everything's in place, won't need, they need their police and fire, and of course their fire department is merged with Dearborn, so one and the same there. The police department is separate, but at least they'll be communicating the dispatches directly. Tomorrow, May 20th, 36th Annual Dearborn Symphony Home Tour. I mentioned this last week. A lot of people in Dearborn, I know, like to go and be a little bit nosy. I mean, look at other people's houses, okay, and just see how they've got them decorated and how they're landscaped. And this is the 36th Annual Home Tour to help raise money for the Dearborn Symphony. Done by the Friends of the Dearborn Symphony organization. It's going to be tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. It'll be in the Highland and Howard Park neighborhoods of the city. Tickets are $16 through May 19th. Well, that's passed. Well, that's today. So, and $21 a day of the tour, and they are available at any of 14 locations as well as at the website Dearborn Symphony Friends. I think it's Friends because it's the end of a a paragraph. Maybe it's just hyphenated there for some crazy reason. I thought it was hyphenated, but if you just type in your browser, you know, your search engine, if you will, Dearborn Symphony Friends, you'll find dearbornsymphonyfriends.org, whether it's hyphenated before friends or not. We can't tell because of the way it came out in the article here. Just the way that goes, those columns, those silly columns. You can call the symphony office, too. They usually have someone there on Friday at 565-2424. That's 313-565-2424 for information about the home tour. Tickets purchased online will be held at Will Call at the home tour headquarters. That's going to be the Dearborn Country Club, 800 North Military, for pickup the day of the tour. Otherwise, you can just, I guess, stop there because that's the headquarters for it. So that's where you have to start. You get the maps and information about where to drive, where to park, or whatever. But tickets are still available today, I assume. Cherry Hill Pharmacy, Cherry Hill Road, Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce on Michigan Avenue, right part of the Bryant Public Library, lower level. Dearborn Racket and Health Club, Dearborn Symphony Office. That's at, of course, I don't know where that is. Is that the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center? 23400 Michigan Avenue. Or are they in Garrison office or somewhere else? I'm not sure where 23400 Michigan Avenue is. Oh, call them, 565-2424. Okay. Fisher Flowers on Monroe has these tickets. Logan Glass on Michigan Avenue has the tickets. McFadley Ross Funeral Home on Brady. Oh, my goodness, it's all over the city. Even a Senate Coney Island on Greenfield. In Dearborn Heights, there's, So just, it's a fun thing to do with the family. And usually it doesn't take more than an hour or two, and you don't have to go on the whole tour. You can just go on partial tour if you want to. And be sure to dress up a little bit and fancy and get to meet the people in the neighborhood and see what's going on. A lot of people like to do that. And I remember it was done once, and the house I was living in 30 years ago, I think we were on the tour also. It took a lot to get the yard ready, let me tell you. Okay, also looking through the Times Herald from this last Wednesday. Had to pass on that story. A lot of stories have already happened. The paper comes out on the 17th and tells you about things that are happening on the 17th or the 18th. And then here it's Friday, and the weekly paper is no good for some of the stories. That's just the way it happens. But they could put these stories in the week before, couldn't they? Then I could mention them on the air. Wow, what a big help. But then people wouldn't need to buy the papers. Oh. Henry Ford College, our Hammond Planetarium in our science building, the Science Center, as we call it, on our main campus here at 5101 Evergreen. Yes, WHFR is licensed to Henry Ford College, and we have our studios in the Student Center, Building M, on the main campus, too. So just in case you don't know where we're located, we are an all-volunteer, independent, non-commercial station, with the exception of just a couple of part-time managers, such as yours truly. But here's the information about the new planetarium presentation. It's entitled Fireflies in the Garden. It's the Summer Star Talk, and it started last Wednesday, May 17th, at the Hammond Planetarium. And it runs every Wednesday from May 17th to August 9th, and every other Saturday from May 27th to July 22nd. So double-check which Saturday it is. The Wednesday showtimes are 7:30 p.m. Saturday showtimes are 3 p.m. Admission is free and open to the public. So can't get a price better than that. The Summer Star Talk is narrated by Susan McGraw, who is the Henry Ford College Academic Coordinator of Telecommunication and Journalism, as well as WHFR's General Manager, another of those part-time management people. Doors open 15 minutes before showtime and close promptly once the program begins. So if you don't get there, get in line, say 20 minutes, half hour ahead, you might not get in because HFC will not admit latecomers once the doors close. And that's because it's a planetarium. Duh. They don't want all the light from the hallway to come in. It's dark, so they can project the little beams of light on the ceiling so you can see the stars. Okay? And they can use the laser pointer to point out things and so on. So that's why they can't keep the doors open after it starts. No reservations are necessary because that seating is available on a first-come, first-served basis. I would suggest coming a little bit in advance. So it's a science center. I believe that's the J building. Think of me. Big letter J on the side of it. And you'll find the planetarium, Hammond Planetarium. I'm sure there's signs inside, too, where that is. It's sort of in the center of the building. And if you do want contact information on the Hammond Planetarium, Fireflies in the Garden, which goes Wednesdays and alternate Saturdays until August 9th, you can contact Stephen Morell at 313-317-1536. Stephen Morell at 313-317-1536. That's on our hfcc.edu website, too. That's right. We still got the two C's in the website address. Okay. hfcc.edu. Just look for events, and you'll see the Hammond Planetarium story there somewhere on the homepage. Scroll down or up or whatever. A story that got into, well, there's actually two stories here that relate to things we've already talked about. One was so important, it was picked up by the Michigan Education Digest. That's the Mackinac Center, or Mackinac Center, if you will, for public policy, the conservative think tank, which is, I think, a contradiction in terms, if not an oxymoron. But Dearborn Schools have eliminated in-district choice option. Dearborn Public Schools Board recently approved a plan to eliminate its program to allow school choice within the district. The district does not participate in the state's Schools of Choice program that is allowing people to come in from other cities to be students in Dearborn for a price, I think. Maybe not. But it has allowed students at one school to apply to switch to another within the district. Officials say they handle about 500 requests every year within the district, and that with overcrowded schools, it has become too challenging to accommodate requests. The district may still allow families to switch schools due to hardship, but in lower numbers than before. That was also in the Press and Guide originally by Katie Hetrick, and I guess the Michigan Education Digest people picked it up from there. Of course, as we did a story last week, the board had some difficult questions, and they think they're going to have to find a way to redistribute the high schools throughout the city. In other words, which areas go to which high school, which one of the three high schools, because I think Dearborn High School and Fortson, that's the far west and the far east, high schools are overloaded, overcrowded, and that's not good for education. And so they're going to find a way to redraw the lines, if you will, of the areas where students will be going to high school, and therefore will get more people from the east and west sides to go to the central high school, Etzel Ford. Okay. By the way, two people spoke at the meeting, asking that also this is the meeting of the Dearborn Board of Education, not to move the Dearborn High School video program to the Michael Berry Career Center, one of several options proposed for easing overcrowding at the high school. Dobbs, this is from Susan Dobbs and current student Madison Murdoch, both lobbied for the program to stay in his current home. Dobbs wrote a letter from Russ Gibb, who the facility is now named after, that supported keeping number two, the program at the school, and for a variety of reasons. Again, it's not easy to keep a program going if it's going to be moved far away. If transportation becomes an issue, then the number of students enrolled in it are going to drop. Also, as we know, since I've been in the telecom program here at the college, one way or the other, for the last 40-plus years, it's very competitive. And to put somebody in a career education building, it sounds like, well, you just go there, and then after high school, you get a job. You know, often those programs are called vocational training programs, and they're usually set up for careers that actually start, whether or not they're careers, but jobs that are actually available, readily, pretty available anyway, right after you graduate. And there are some of those with proper training. Although today, really, as most people know, I hope you know this, I was told this when I graduated from high school in 1964, yeah, do the math, that without a college degree, you're pretty much stuck in a low-paying or no-paying job for the rest of your life. And they were talking in those days about a four-year college degree. Okay, a lot of training, a lot of knowledge to get a good job that you can have for a while until you have to get more training and education to get the next good job because things keep changing. Yeah. And so I'm sure there's a number of reasons that Russ Gebb mentioned in his letter why that wouldn't be ideal. Also, you know, really, those of us in telecom, just like many program people in math, say everybody should take math courses. People in science said everybody should take science courses, whether you're a major or not. And in telecom, we say everybody should take at least one or two telecommunication courses because we study communication, how it's done these days, electronic media, what are the differences? What can you believe? What shouldn't you believe? How do you do critical thinking about the information you get, whether it's audio or video or both, whether it's one direction, you know, radio and television, broadcast television or one direction, or whether it's interactive, totally interactive, like a telephone might be, or instant messaging or texting, or interactive with a computer, as most internet websites are. Computer that was programmed by human beings, we assume, but there's not real people there usually interacting with you. By the way, I'm a car guy, okay? That's one of my special interests is automobiles and sort of a hobby. and so when I want to get information these days, sometimes I go to, you know, big manufacturer websites, let's say Chevrolet, name dropper, and somebody comes online from their website and says, can I answer any questions? And so I type in my question, and guess what? They don't know the answer. This happens almost every time. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, these people are representing Chevrolet and they don't know the answer to the question. Let's see. I'm not putting down Chevrolet. Let's see. Nissan. Okay. I asked a Nissan instant messaging chat person, hey, is the Nissan Leaf, that's our electric car, folks, front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive? Should be a simple enough question, of course, but it wasn't on their website. Their whole website doesn't talk about whether the engine, the electric motor with powered by batteries, it connects to the front wheels or the back wheels. And it does make a difference in handling and so on. And the answer I got back from the Nissan chat person was, well, most of our cars are front-wheel drive. Yeah, well, not all of them. And so that's why I was asking. Oh, my goodness. And of course, again, as a car guy, I go around to dealerships sometimes and just try to get information and get a test drive every now and then. Especially in the year that I'm going to be getting a new car, you know. And, oh, my gosh, the salespeople don't know the answers to my simple questions. And if it's not on the website and the salespeople don't know, and it's not in the brochure because they don't make paper brochures anymore, and how are you going to find out? Who knows? How are you going to make a choice? Well, they don't want you to have information, make a choice. They want you to see a pretty color and buy it right then. Because they don't, you know. Or, ooh, hey, look, that rear hatch, it opens when I put my foot under the bumper. Ooh. Yeah, put out $40,000 for a car because it, you know, you're too lazy to open the hatch door on the back of your car. Because everybody always has their hands full, right? When they're getting to the rear hatch? Answer, no, of course they don't. Gee whiz. Anyway, so a lot of information out there, and a lot of people don't know a lot of things, too. That's what I've discovered. Coming up on the 24th, there's a meeting, and I think everybody in the east side of town has got this DTE, our friendly energy company, both gas, natural gas, and electricity. They're going to hold a meeting on the east side, and you've already been notified about that because they're changing their meters, the smart meters over there. And a lot of other things are happening over there, too, upgrading 40 miles of Dearborn's natural gas infrastructure. I know they did. They were in my neighborhood last year doing that. It's a little bit of a mess, but hey, that's what you pay for upgrades, right? You're not paying extra. It's your money at work. They're not charging you extra, not this year anyway. May 24th meeting. You can find out more about this by calling DTE Energy 313-256-6227. Okay, because it doesn't say where the meeting is. Honest. Oh, here it is. Okay, it's buried in the middle. Why don't they put it at the end or at the beginning? They bury it in the middle. So if you're in the right areas, that's areas bound by Chase Road and East Moross Circle and West Warren and Tireman, can attend the May 24th meeting about the project in their neighborhood. The meeting set for 6:30 p.m. in the middle of town at the Henry Ford Centennial Library on May 24th. And that's next Wednesday, I believe. Okay. Today, I didn't get over there today, but the 2017 season of the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market did open today. So it's now open every Friday from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And, of course, it's located in the parking lot behind the historic Bryant Library. If you went over there today, free reusable shopping bags will be distributed to the first 400 shoppers. All different kinds of things that they offer there. And special events every Friday. Stuff for kids. Apparently today, the Blue Fusion Jazz Quartet will provide musical entertainment. Or they did at noon. I'm not sure they're still playing. And they have some special days coming up. Kids Day on June 2nd, Community Day on July 21st, Art at the Market on September 15th, and a Harvest Festival on October 6th. By the way, October 6th is the closing day for that. And I just happen to know it's not in the story, but June 30th, they won't be open because that's the July 4th weekend. Sort of, and they figure not many people attend because they're going out of town or something. So be sure to get over there. Check that out. Fresh food, fresh vegetables, and fresh artistic items. Also plants to plant. They usually have a lot of flowers earlier in the year to plant in your yard. So that's a good thing. Huh? Mm-hmm. There was a public hearing last night of the budget proposal to answer any questions people might have. I was not in attendance, and there's no story on the web, Press and Guide website at this point. Might be something in the Sunday edition of the Press and Guide about that or on their website soon, pressandguide.com. The budget is set to be adopted next Tuesday at 7 p.m. in the council chambers at the Dearborn Administrative Center. So you can go and watch that because I don't think there's any chance to change anything at this point. By the way, all documents, really, they do believe in transparency, at least in this regard, at the city of Dearborn. And I don't make a joke about that, but I know specifically that all the documents about the budget for next year, that is for the next fiscal year starting on July 1st this year, for the city of Dearborn are on their website. It's usually, I did it last year, 30 pages. And it is kind of hard to understand because if you don't know what some of those light items stand for, you don't know if that's a lot of money for that or not enough money. It's hard to judge. So it's difficult for outsiders to evaluate those numbers. I'm just saying. I mean, I don't know what other way they can do it. So going to these public meetings, which aren't Well, they're in the Dearborn newsletter that goes out from the city of Dearborn. And if you're on the email list for the city of Dearborn.org, then they'll send it to you. But they don't send all the supporting documents. They tell you where on their website you can go to download them yourself. But I think the discussion should be more detailed for the public. I don't know how that can be done, though. A lot of people just don't care. Just let the people you've elected and appointed do their job, and if you don't like it, the next election around, you don't have to vote for them. Small story in the Press and Guide, but it's a big story because it might impact us. About 30,000 people in the United States work for Ford Motor Company, and they have now offered, that they have a plan to lay off 10% of their workers worldwide. And that's because their profits were down 35% during the first quarter of 2017. And they've been, because they're a publicly traded business, they're not privately owned. You might say, well, Ford is owned by the Ford family. No, they have shareholders, stockholders. And when the price of the stock starts dropping down, 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 because those people don't think they're getting enough profit, it puts pressure on management, I think, sometimes to make bad decisions. But in this case, maybe they'll just buy more robots. They are giving, I thought I saw the number today in another source, mlive.com or somewhere like that, that they're offering more than 9,000 people of their 30,000 in the U.S. retirement buyouts. I don't know how much that is, or for how long that money would last someone if they weren't employed, but they're offering a third of their force in America, their workforce, these retirement buyouts, or just buyouts. See, maybe it's not retirement. Just if you want to, you know, you can leave now, and we'll give you money to leave. So I assume that they don't think the whole 9,000 are going to take the offer. But they want to reduce their workforce 10% because that will lower their cost and therefore increase their profits. They're going to keep producing the same number of cars worldwide that they are now. Which makes you think, aha, how can they do that? Well, first of all, it's because they're going for white-collar people, people in management. And let me tell you that middle management, as they call it, is susceptible to automation these days. Robots as a mid-level manager, not the robots, but the computers, giving advice on how to plan business, how to do marketing, how to do production better, and so on. The computers can tell the higher-level managers, the ones that aren't being fired, to how to do it. So even mid-level managers aren't needed as much. So that's why it's white-collar workers. They do not think that any hourly workers are going to be affected. It's mainly the so-called salaried employees, not the hourly employees. Also because I don't think the salaried employees have a union. Ha ha. And so to dismiss 10% of the hourly employees, they'd have to work with the union to agree to that. And that's another reason to have a union, folks. Okay, where are we? Oh, my goodness, 20 minutes to go. Not quite 20 minutes, 18 minutes to go on top of the hour. And of course, Highway 61 with Kitty Love will be on at the top of the hour for 2 hours of the best in blues of local music. So stay tuned for that. From 4 to 6 o'clock today will be Mike Holloway and his Go With The Flow Mike Holloway Blues Show. And he'll have more, can you believe it, more local blues music and music from blues artists throughout the world. In fact, we play all kinds of blues artists here, but we certainly try to feature as many local artists as possible. It's not too early for you to mention that at the end of June, it's only about 5 weeks away now, Sunday, June 25th, Ladies Sing the Blues is what we're calling it. Don't think Diana Ross here. We're thinking of, and we've got scheduled, Thornetta Davis the queen, diva of the blues and soul in Detroit. And she got so many awards in Detroit Music Awards 2 weeks ago for a record producer even and live performer and also someone with about 15 years experience in this area who's got the last three albums have been fantastic. Eliza Neels is going to be performing with special guest Howard Glazer at our event. It's a W. Wichifar fundraiser, by the way. And Alicia Marie, also a new local artist who's actually based in, I think, the Traverse City area, but she's been performing in Detroit with R.J. Spangler's different groups for a while, and she goes to college at University of Mississippi, and boy, they knew something about the blues down there. Yes, they do. She's a music major, and she's going to be performing, too. She's got a great new first album out, and so the whole spectrum of young, middle, and, wow, big-time diva. It's going to be a great show, and each will have their own 45-minute set in the 4 hours from 2 to 6 p.m. It's a Sunday afternoon, $15 per person, 21 or over. It's going to be at the Hastings Street Ballroom on Milwaukee in Detroit, historic Hastings Street Ballroom. Food and beverages are available at extra cost, catering by Smoky Roads Barbecue. And it's going to be very reasonable, too, for that barbecue stuff, I know. Food is very important to me. Music and food, oh, what a combination. But we hope to see you there. And so you just show up, pay the $15 per person, and you get in. Well, if we have an overload of people, and I think we might because of Thornetta Davis's fans and Eliza Neal's fans and Alicia Marie getting a lot of new fans, it could be that we'll have to stop the ticket sales at the door at a certain point. Hope not. Hope we accommodate everybody who wants to come in. I think the venue holds about 250 or 300 total in their several rooms. But it's going to be a great day. So plan on getting down there. This is co-sponsored with the Detroit Blues Society. And we thank you very much for their help for this fundraiser for WHFR. What else we got going here? Oh, my goodness. Couple more stories as it yells from the background here about from the local area. Well, this just came up and it's interesting. A Dearborn Heights councilman has just resigned his post. And this was on the Press and Guide website on Wednesday. Councilman Thomas Berry resigned on Tuesday. He got the story on Wednesday. From his spot on the Heights Council, they're going to have to appoint a replacement for the remainder of his term. What you need to know is that if you're in Dearborn Heights, he already put his petition in and he's on the ballot in the August 8th primary election. And it's too late to pull your name out. So don't vote for Thomas Berry because he can't run. He won't run. He's out. Kind of interesting, of the three people up for re-election, and I don't understand the story. I'm sorry. It's not clear here. But Barry, along with, it says, this is literally what it says. Barry, along with council members Bob Constant, Margaret Horvath, and Joseph Kosinski, are up for re-election. But Constant now is the only member seeking to retain a spot. So Horvath and Kosinski aren't running either? I guess not. That's the assumption. I think I read that before when I did the story. So, Constant is the only member seeking to retain a spot. So there's... But somehow it says challengers in the next paragraph are open to claim one of the four open council seats. So if there's these four members who are up for re-election... And Constant is still in there. That's only three open council seats. Oh, I understand. There's also, and they didn't mention, Lisa Hicks Clayton, who is running for mayor. Okay. She couldn't run for re-election. Term limited, I believe, out there in Dearborn Heights, according to their city charter. And so that's the fourth open seat. Lisa Hicks Clayton. Because if she... Right. She's either going to be mayor or not going to be on the council because she's term limited. And how many people do we have running other than Bob Costin? We have 9 others. So 4 open seats. I assume they're going to reduce the 10 to 8 in the primary to have 2 open for 2 people open for each seat. I mean, it's just the highest vote getters, you know, the top 4 will get elected to the city council. Just to go over the names, though, the whole 10 are Bob Constan, incumbent, Ali Alumna, Ned Apigian, who has served on the council before, Mo Bedun, Bill Bazzi, Jeff Malad, Denise Maxwell, Larry Mitchell, Lisa Oshansky, and Todd Wenzel. Oh, and you might say, why? Why did Thomas Berry resign? And he has a somewhat general statement. He says, the greatest pain of public service are the sacrifices a person must make of themselves and those near and dear to them. Unfortunately, I can no longer make those sacrifices, and I must turn my attention inward. Yeah, public service is a tough thing. And I'm not, of course, there could be all kinds of possibilities on what he's referring to. And I won't speculate, of course. But these council jobs, remember, are part-time, theoretically. Part-time. I mean, they don't pay like full-time, and you couldn't survive on the pay of a local city council person. You have to have a day job. So maybe with the day job and the part-time job, it's just too much of your time. I remember Thomas Berry's name, even though I don't live in Dearborn Heights, as being involved in a lot of these issues at Dearborn Heights over the years. And so thank you for your service, sir. That's all I can say. And just remember, if you're voting in the August 8th primary in Dearborn Heights, and I hope you are, and you see his name there, you know, it doesn't do any good to vote for him because he won't be accepting that. What would happen if people voted for him and he was in the top 8 and so his name goes on to the November ballot too? But there's plenty of time to readjust the November ballot. I don't think they would let that happen, even though people voted for him. There's a question for you. Well, there was another open meeting in Dearborn. Who knew? And this had to do with the redesign of it's overall a transformation of the east and west downtown Dearborn development plans. And one of the big issues that came up is the zoning or rezoning efforts. And I asked Mayor O'Reilly on my show in March about this. What is form-based zoning code? And the city is moving toward a design-focused code for land development starting in the west downtown Dearborn development area. So they're looking at the west side first. And basically what that means is that the zones can be, as I understand it, mixed, that there can be residential and business in the same building. Okay, it's not just one or the other. And if they point out, of course, they had to get a consultant from Royal Oak to tell them this, is that a lot of successful communities do it this way. Oh, my God. A lot of the biggest cities, of course. Anybody ever go to another city? I mean, we're talking about at least the rich areas of Chicago and certainly Toronto, downtown Toronto. It's just very exciting to have residential and business in the same areas. You can walk to work if you can afford the cost, because usually in these areas it's very expensive to be able not to use a car and say, well, save a lot of money, don't have to use a car. Yeah, but can you afford the rent or the lease or the cost of purchase of your domicile? Oh, my gosh. By the way, the name of our Dearborn City planner is Jeff Polkowski. Yep. So they had a really nice meeting this last Tuesday. And we'll see how it goes. I'm totally in favor of what I understand about it, so I don't see why residents would have a problem. But there, nothing's perfect, so there you are. All right, what else do we have here? I thought, since we're approaching, well, at least some parochial schools I know, some Catholic schools are actually having, this is their last week. And that means in the high schools, parochial high schools, they'll be graduated. They'll go through their graduation ceremonies, or it's also called commencement, which is a beginning. Think of commencement as not the ending. The word commence means to begin, sort of the commencement of the rest of their lives. Interesting. Anyway, here's an editorial I wanted to read in the last few minutes of our show today about from Ralph Nader. And it's he posted this on his website, nader.org, on the 16th, earlier this week, Tuesday. And the title is Schooling for Myths and Powerlessness. And he says, all over America, school children are completing another academic year before their summer vacation. This invites the questions, what did they learn and what did they do with what they learned? Ralph says, I'm not talking about their test scores, nor the latest fads in rebranding education like the STEM, which stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math curriculum, that de-emphasizes the first two-thirds of the old mantra, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Get that? The reading and the writing part. Where is that? Isn't that important? Oh, only thing important is math and science. STEM. Yeah, but without the reading and writing, you're really no good at anything, including science. Sorry, that's my opinion. That's what Ralph seems to be suggesting. He also goes on to say, I am questioning what they learned about their real world surroundings, about preparing themselves for life as citizens, workers, consumers, taxpayers, voters, and members of various communities. Not much. Not very much, sad to say. The same is true of my generation. Instead of receiving an enriching and well-rounded education, we were fed myths. All societies perpetuate lavish myths that enable the few to rule over the many, repress critical thinking, and camouflage the grim realities. Our country was and remains no exception. In school, we learned that our country was number one, the greatest in the world. We sang Onward Christian Soldiers in music class. Being the greatest was neither defined nor questioned. We simply had a vague sense that great meant militarily and economically big. In practice, however, great was associated with knee-jerk patriotism and served as a barrier to thinking critically about what we were told to take for granted. Four, were we to parse the deeper meaning of the word great, we might have had to make specific comparisons to the United States in concrete ways with other countries such as Canada and those in Europe. And we might have discovered that we weren't first in many areas of human and environmental well-being. Early in elementary school, we were told that Christopher Columbus discovered America, and what followed was the arrival of the pioneers of civilization. This myth served to justify the white man's domination over inferior races, whether native or brought in as slaves from Africa. In truth, as my father taught me, says Ralph Nader, Columbus invaded America in search of gold and, with his soldiers, slaughtered Caribbean tribes that long preceded Columbus's arrival in their lands. Along the way in school, we were told that unlike other evil countries, American soldiers did not intentionally kill civilians, as did our cruel enemies. Somehow General Sherman's march to the sea during the Civil War escaped our attention, as did later mass slaughter of human beings in the Philippines and the deliberate targeting and incineration of entire residential civilian areas in World War I and World War II. Two, in the language of the official strategies, quote-unquote, terrorize the populations, unquote. The myth of America without imperial intentions camouflaged the purposes of several wars and many imperial assaults and overthrows. Who are we to question? Other countries were empires. America was guided by, quote-unquote, manifest destiny. Then there was the fictional character Paul Bunyan, the giant lumberjack from American folklore, who was hijacked and commercialized by the timber industry to propagandize the minds of millions of children with its huge blue ox babe. Bunyan conquered and cut down the forest. One of the Bunyan stories ended with our hero leaving Montana for Alaska's vast wilderness. Bunyan and Babe, we were assured, would persevere, quote, until the last tree was down, unquote. Progress, the myth instructed, was the exploitation of the natural world, not the preservation of nature in sustainable ways. The most pervasive myth, which persists to this day, he says, is that the free market provides a supreme pathway to economic prosperity. Never mind monopolies, business business crimes and deceptions, government subsidies, bailouts and taxpayer giveaways, patent monopolies, fine print contract servitude, and the abuse of our air, water, and soil as toxic corporate sewers. The free market myth teaches that government regulation is inherently bad. Suing businesses in court harms the economy, and that unions and consumer cooperatives are un-American, even communistic. This dogma has no room for the honest assertion that the market can, quote, make a good servant but a bad master, unquote, in the words of R. Murray Lovins of the Rocky Mountain Institute. So Ralph concludes by saying, just look at today's headlines and ponder the joint partnership of plutocracy and oligarchy, often called the corporate state. No wonder we the people are not working to resist and overcome these destructive forces of greed and power. A meaningful answer starts with replacing our years of schooling, punctuated by years of being commercially entertained and distracted, with acquiring the civic motivations and skills necessary to build a society that can move us forward. Liberty and justice for all. As Thomas Jefferson observed at our nation's conception, an educated citizenry is a vital requisite for our survival as a free people. Congratulations to all the graduates. Good luck out there. It's WHFR Dearborn. We'll be here again next week. Take care. Here comes Highway 61. Clarksdale, south of Memphis, Tennessee.